Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We're brought to you today by ZipRecruiter. Now you can post your job openings on all the major sites, ziprecruiter.com/free trial. More on that a little bit later in the podcast. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis today, Jim, and we start with good martini, and that's the latest cabinet selections from President-elect Donald Trump. While the whole soap opera, especially over Secretary of State, continues to play out, we have two more selections for the cabinet, and I don't think most conservatives are going to have a problem with these. Elaine Chao, who was Secretary of Labor for George W. Bush, is apparently ready to do the full Liddy Dole and also become Transportation Secretary. Mrs. Dole had both of those positions. So I guess Elaine Chao is going to have to run for the Senate at some point. But the big news...
She will, but remember... Greg, that Elizabeth Dole's husband was Senate Majority Leader. Oh, wait! That's the case in this one, too.
Yes. So
there's some sort of like, you know, there's some sort of Freaky Friday type movie or something where Liddy Dole and Elizabeth Chao run into each other and realize they have basically the same lives.
So. Pretty much the case. The big news that actually broke last night was that Georgia Congressman Tom Price has been tapped by Trump to be the next Secretary of Health and Human Services. And Jim, you've pointed out in the Jolt today that Tom Price has written a number of pieces for National Review. I've had the chance to interview him a number of times. Here's a couple of clips from a conversation I had with him just before the election after President Obama went down to Florida and made that ridiculous speech about how great Obamacare is despite the skyrocketing premiums. And in addition to obviously being critical of the president, I asked him what his plan for reform was. And here are a couple of the key points.
We believe that everybody ought to be ought to gain health coverage, but we believe that they ought to gain the kind of coverage that they want to purchase for themselves and for their family, not that the government forces you to buy. And so we have a very specific proposal for tax credits or refundable credits or advanceable refundable credits based upon age for every single American that would make it so that there's financial feasibility for every single American to purchase the kind of coverage that that they want. We also believe it's imperative to have lawsuit abuse reform. We've got to make certain that physicians are able to continue to practice the kind of medicine and health care that they believe is the right thing to do, as opposed to what the government dictates to them they must do.
So a lot of market-oriented approaches here to reforming the system. He is the current House Budget Committee chairman. He's very close to Paul Ryan. That should be a pretty good working relationship when the effort to repeal and replace gets underway here, Jim. So a lot to like here.
Yeah, Tom Price is probably the single best possible choice to be the next Health and Human Services Secretary who isn't named Bobby Jindal. Obviously, that's not going to come to pass, so Tom Price is pretty darn good as well. As you mentioned, and we heard in that audio, Tom Price is a guy who really knows healthcare policy backwards and forwards. He's put forth not just one, but several different potential alternatives to Obamacare. Very strong advocate of buying insurance across state lines, the importance of tort reform, and getting doctors to the point where they don't have to practice defensive medicine. Also worth noting that he is a doctor, which doesn't mean he's right about everything, but I always just felt like if you wanted better healthcare policy, put the doctors front and center. And I believe at least a couple of years ago that the House Republicans had six doctors in their ranks and none of them amongst the Democrats. I don't know about you, Greg. I love the thought of healthcare policy being put together by doctors instead of lawyers. So maybe you'll get more actual healthcare and fewer actual lawsuits. But I think another thing, which, you know, this may not necessarily be determinative of his success in the role, but everybody who's worked with Tom Price walks away liking him, respecting him. He is good-natured and amiable and respectful and a guy who's very good at building consensus. And he just seems like just exactly the kind of right guy. His former staffers rave about him. Also, you want to throw in Elaine Chao in this category. Also very widely respected, both sides of the aisle, worked in the Bush administration. You know, you can insert as many jokes as you like of you know, the challenges of working with the Senate when you're transportation secretary is Mrs. McConnell. My feeling is that you're actually going to see pretty darn good relations between the Trump administration and Congress, at least with the appointments like these. If this is the crazy pitchforks and torches crowd coming, if this is draining the swamp, Greg, I love it. Some people are going to point out those are two really long time Washington insiders. They know what they're doing.
Yeah, you got to like that. And I can just imagine if there is any tussle between the White House and Congress over infrastructure spending coming up, that could be pretty funny with the Elaine Chao and Mitch McConnell having some.
Greg, they're going to be working arm in arm. You know, any disagreements between the Trump administration and the Senate, they're just going to bicker like an old married couple.
One exit point here on Tom Price. Here is how the Washington Post describes him, in addition to other things, of course. Price has played a leading role in Republican opposition to the law, meaning Obamacare, and has helped draft several comprehensive bills to replace it, which is true. But, Jim, every time the president responds to criticism from Republicans, the line is always, well, where's their alternative? Where's your bill? They've had lots of bills. The White House ignores them, and the media does its duty by ignoring them, too. And it's just funny how that gets now slid into this story almost as a negative thing.
One of the arguments about media bias is not just word choice. It's not just what's get covered. It's what the newspapers just don't have room for. What just they can't even fit on page A17 or whatever types of issues. They just don't have time to fit in the news, that hour of cable news or the half hour nightly news. It turns out, Greg, that you almost never had time for any of the Republican alternatives, did they?
No.
Funny how that happens.
Yeah, and they even had them before Obamacare passed. Yeah. But they, of course, were deeply in the minority in both the House and Senate, and they got stiff-armed the whole way through. So just to lay that out there. All right, on to the bad martini now. And, Jim, we just got done with a very long, very contentious presidential campaign where the Democratic nominee got a lot of heat for being a Secretary of State who got into trouble for improperly handling classified and even some cases top secret information. In fact, that might be one of the major reasons why Hillary Clinton ended up not becoming the next president of the United States. So as Donald Trump goes through this Secretary of State roulette, he is apparently seriously considering someone who mishandled top secret classified information in David Petraeus. He, of course, was the CIA director at the time. He shared his schedule, which was top secret information, with his mistress. He pled guilty to a misdemeanor to avoid jail time. But at this point, he would need to get a presidential waiver to see classified information. So the question, Jim, is that while we certainly have high regard for David Petraeus in certain ways, is this really an area, A, where you want to have this battle, and B, is he the guy who's necessarily going to be the right diplomat to lead our efforts anyway?
Yeah, okay, so I'm going to play devil's advocate on this one, Greg, and I want to say this is your chance to talk me out of this, because I kind of floated this yesterday afternoon and got a wide variety of responses on Twitter, including the usual four-letter ones. Look, with Hillary Clinton's argument, you know, she was investigated by the FBI. The FBI, if you look at the internal report, basically found like 7 or 8 ways that she violated the law. Comey looks at it and says, we just don't know if a prosecutor would bring charges, so we're going to recommend not bringing charges, in sort of a circular logic there. David Petraeus, and everything you laid out there, did pay a price, right? This was put on probation. People can argue whether it was a lenient sentence for him. I kind of looked at this and said, look, there are two things. One is that he did pay a price, unlike Hillary Clinton. That's why I don't think it's necessarily a straight apples to apples comparison. And the second thing is, well, this is David Petraeus. This is the man who basically saved the effort in Iraq in 2006, 2007, 2008 with the surge. And they're really, to me, I feel like something like that should stand for a lot. And I kind of have this feeling that some of this has gone down the memory hole. Unless people think that, once the surge was announced, any general would have gotten the same results. Anybody would have been as good. I know that at Langley, he was highly respected. Similar work in Afghanistan. This is a guy who has, earned the respect of people and generally gotten pretty darn good results everywhere he's gone. So if Trump thinks Petraeus is the best possible choice for Secretary of State, maybe he's leaning Romney. Apparently they're meeting again today, which as somebody pointed out, if all this is an effort to humiliate Romney, this is a long, elaborate effort going on for weeks and weeks. Maybe he likes Bob Corker, the chair of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, better. Maybe he likes Giuliani or Gingrich. But my attitude kind of was that if Trump decides Petraeus is the best choice, then the right thing to do is say, I'm picking him. He has paid his price. I believe he is the best choice to represent the United States in this dangerous world. And I'm going forward with that. Just wait out the storm. I think this would actually pass if Trump actually thinks Petraeus is the best possible choice. Now, maybe he doesn't. And also, I'm not convinced that Petraeus is the best possible choice, although I think he is a pretty good choice. Maybe that makes me a giant hypocrite when it comes to the issue of handling classified information.
Well, first of all, it's a well-articulated argument. Secondly, I am never Corker, hashtag never Corker. Okay. Anybody who basically helped the president...
That's your Rand deal. Okay, yeah, never mind. Scratch him.
Yes. That should be disqualifying, basically helping the president circumvent the treaty provision of the Constitution. As for Petraeus, absolutely. He was probably the most effective commander in Iraq and Afghanistan, Central Command. The CIA time was obviously a little bit more clouded, whether he helped to kind of muddle things about the talking points on Benghazi. And then, of course, there was the infidelity that eventually led to his ouster. He didn't have a private server. He didn't have top secret emails about national secrets, operatives, and that sort of things going to Paula Broadwell. But top secret information was being shared with the mistress, so there might be a little bit of a weakness there or a vulnerability. Of course, hopefully he's learned his lesson about those sorts of things. While Petraeus wouldn't necessarily be the worst person in the world, I think given the baggage that he does bring, there's probably somebody who could do the job better. Who that person is out of the remaining candidates that we've heard about is a good question. There's certainly positives and drawbacks to all the others. So if it is Petraeus, I would say expect a fight. But you do have to defend something to at least to an extent that we condemned pretty roundly for the last year and a half. Yeah.
Maybe I'm just I have too many memories, Greg, of people calling him General Betrayus, like yes. MoveOn.org and things like the argument about the Iraq War back then. My attitude was this was a guy who managed to do the near impossible or at least the extremely unlikely. Which means he's got some of the highest upside and also maybe some of the highest downside if he manages to play inappropriate footsie again.
Yes, that should definitely be a precondition if he is ultimately offered the job. But, Jim, one of the reasons I think the Secretary of State hire is taking so long, in addition to perhaps multiple quality candidates, trying to make sure you got the right person to articulate your vision of the world, maybe Trump is not using all the recruiting tools that he could be using. And as a result, this is a longer process than it needs to be. So the question to our listeners is, are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? Because posting your job in one place is not enough to find the quality candidates. If you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post your job on all the top job sites. And now you can.
You know, I'm glad you brought this up, Greg. It's a fantastic segue. With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post your job to 100-plus job sites, including social media networks like Facebook and Twitter, all with a single click. You can find candidates in any city or industry nationwide. Just post once and watch your qualified candidates roll in to ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. No more juggling emails or calls to your office. You can quickly screen candidates, rate them, and hire the right person fast.
Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by over 1 million businesses. And right now, our listeners on the 3 Martini Lunch can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. That's ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. One more time to try it for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. And if Trump had used that, and maybe he is, I'm sure it would be fantastic, terrific, the best thing ever. All his regular adjectives would apply to ZipRecruiter.
Huge.
All right, on to the crazy martini now, Jim. And there's multiple aspects to the attack at Ohio State University yesterday that are worthy of commentary today. Basically, we've got this Somali native who's now a student or was a student at Ohio State University. According to his postings on social media just before the attack, he apparently had reached a quote-unquote boiling point, made a reference to lone wolf attacks, according to Pete Williams at NBC News, saying, quote, America, stop interfering with other countries, especially Muslim Ummah. We are not weak. We are not weak. Remember that. This guy's name is Abdul Razak Ali Artan. He drove his car into a group of students, hitting several of them. Then he got out with a machete and tried to attack more of them. Thankfully, a campus police officer showed up within basically a minute. And within a minute after that, he had taken down the suspect. And so the threat was mitigated quite quickly. And who knows how many lives were saved due to the quick thinking actions of the officer. Jim, you had a long jolt post today about the permanent victimhood of this particular person and how that seems to be becoming more and more common. Also, we saw the knee-jerk reaction of the pro-gun control crowd yesterday before we even knew exactly what had happened, perhaps because the Ohio State alert system had suggested there was a shooter situation going on campus. Most likely because they heard the gunshots from the officer. But you had so many people, Tim Kaine most prominent among them, saying another senseless act of gun violence when apparently the only act of gun violence was taking down the attacker. So leaping to conclusions before really any of the facts were in. What stuck out most to you?
Where to begin? I'll cut Tim Kaine a little bit of slack. The initial reporting was everyone was being told in shelter in place, a possible shooter on site. He or whoever is managing his social media should probably be, for the risk of a terrible pun, a little less quick on the draw in circumstances like this. But, you know, he's putting out his statement based on the information he's getting at the time. What struck me about the manifesto from the shooter, or sorry, with the attacker, there I did it myself. The attacker on Facebook was a good chunk of it was a traditional jihadist America, stop picking on other countries, blah, 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 blah. Stuff we're used to getting from these sudden jihad syndrome, angry young Muslim males. But also I was struck by how much whiny victimhood there was in it. And coupled with this interview that this perpetrator did with the student newspaper during the summer, he really walked around upset that everyone was treating him like he was a potential terrorist. And Greg, he thought the best way to demonstrate how upset this made him was to go around killing people. What? Well, that showed us. You know, there's something utterly bizarre about this. And his whole rant is full of this idea that, you know, Muslims are being tortured and killed all around the world. And, you know, so obviously he mentions Burma, Myanmar. Apparently he thinks that the pedestrians on Ohio State University are the right people to lash out to send a signal about that. My sneaking suspicion was it's not just that this guy was garden variety crazy. It's not just that this guy clearly felt the jihadism. He heard the sirens call. Some part of him found it really appealing. He really walked around believing that America itself was malevolent and terrible and hurting Muslims all around the world, which it really isn't. Take a look. If you look at who the victims of ISIS are, a lot of them are Muslims. Who's killing Muslims? ISIS is. Who's killing Muslims? Al-Qaeda. It's not the West that is blowing up the markets in downtown Baghdad. It's not the West that's blowing up markets in the middle of Kabul, right? Or a hospital in Quetta, Pakistan. I just went through the list. It's not hard to find this, and it's done by extremist Islamist jihadists. That's who he should be angry about, but for some reason he sympathizes to this. So I kind of want to grab every young, angry Muslim male in this country and say, are you really aware of what's going on in this world? Or are you being fed this propaganda that America is the bad guy? And I'm wondering, is he hearing this at the mosque? Is he hearing it from his professors? Is he hearing it from social media? Where is he getting this message that the real enemy are the people walking down the street in Columbus, Ohio, instead of the actual people who are actually running out and torturing and killing Muslims in places like Syria and Iraq and places like that? Look, you know, a lot of people say, it's one guy. You can't extrapolate from all that. We will see. I found myself the other, you know, perfect little irony there, Greg, is that he was a refugee. Of course, you can't extrapolate that all refugees are dangerous from this. But one more sign that we have reason to be a little wary about our ability to vet refugees and sort out anyone who's a potential threat among them. Hillary Clinton wanted to greatly expand the number of refugees we're taking in. Glad to see her defeated. Glad to see this option off the table. And the second thing, which was really particularly kind of cathartic about this yesterday, Greg, is that we really didn't have to spend a lot of time saying, do you think it was workplace violence? Do you think he was actually gay and it was all the homophobia that was stirring him to do this? Do you think, you know, to find every conceivable alternate explanation for his motive instead of the one that he actually laid out in his manifesto on Facebook of I am an angry Muslim, America is the enemy, and I'm going to kill as many of you as I can. And rant.
Yeah, there hasn't been a lot of follow-up from the mainstream media on this. I don't know if it's because the victims all survived or they just didn't like where the narrative of this story was going, but very, very little coverage of that on the mainstream news this morning.
Well, it didn't fit the narrative now, did it?
Guess not. Jim, have a good day. We'll do it again tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reminding our listeners you can post your jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. Join us again on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.